any QB NBB.
That's all, folks.
What's up, nerds? It's basketball. Welcome to Horse, a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. My name is Mike Schubert, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, the him performing at the Beacon Theater to us seeing a show at the Beacon Theater last night. It's Adam Amawala. Adam, how's it going?
It's going well. I think I probably prefer being on stage than being in the audience, but I also enjoyed being in the audience. It's cool to have both perspectives.
Yeah. You know, it was a good situation because we went to a concert of a friend of mine who did give us comp tickets. So at least you weren't paying to be there, but I'm sure getting paid and then being on the stage where, what's the capacity of the Beacon? 5,000?
A little shy of 3. It's like 28,000 something.
So yeah, on stage, 3,000 people applauding and laughing at you. Pretty tough to beat.
Yeah. I got to have the flex of when you went backstage to meet your buddy after the show, being like, yeah, been there, done that, you know.
Yeah, pretty sick.
I'm back there all the time. I wish they gave you a lifetime membership. If you've performed there once, you can go see anything you want there for the rest of time.
There is, I won't name the venue so that it's not on blast, but there is a venue that I've performed at in New York that's like a nice place. And to get into like the backstage area, there's like a 4-digit code.
Oh, wow.
I don't think that they've updated the code because I performed there and then like a couple years later, a friend of mine performed there and I was like, what's the code? And the code has not changed. So like in
theory,
that's
a really bad idea. I love the idea that Chipotle changes it every hour on the hour, but a major concert venue is like, nobody will share that.
1, 2, 3, 4. No one will guess it. It is not 1, 2, 3, 4, but still it's like one of those.
Yeah, it's 1, 2, 3, 4
shows there.
Pound sign.
I've seen other shows where I'm like, I could just go backstage. They should change it more frequently.
You know what? I feel like there's a similar comedy thing where I don't think that most non-comedians realize that if you just say you're a comedian and you want to like hang out in the back of the room, unless you're like, you can't do that at the Beacon Theater. But if you go to most comedy clubs, you can just be like, oh, I'm a comic. I'm just gonna like hang in the back and watch.
There are times where it is shockingly easy for me to get into the place I'm performing. Some places like super serious, they'll like check. Like rarely are they like asking for ID. And then usually I'm there like very early. So it's understandable. But like if one of my friends is guesting or like running the merch table or something and they come and I'm like, hey, if they give you a hard time, like I'll come out. And they're like, oh, yeah, just like walk right in. I was like, it shouldn't be that easy.
Right. Like I'm glad I didn't have to come get you. But also I'm concerned about the lack of security.
I'm so glad that, and I'm sure this is the same for your audience, but like me as like podcast nerd audience, like no one tries to do any whack stuff,
right?
Because like it's the lack of security sometimes.
It's funny. I mean, whatever modest following I have, the feedback that I've gotten from comedy club owners every time I have a show where there's like a lot of my people there, it's like they are just so nice. They're like such nice people.
Did I tell you that the place I performed in LA that you gave me the recommendation for?
Yes, the Crow. Shout out to the Crow.
They came up to me after and they were like, because it's like a comedy club.
Right.
They came up to me after and they were like, everyone threw out their trash and recyclables before they left. They didn't leave them under their seats. I was like, oh yeah, they're all a bunch of good, well-acting nerds.
Hey, when you go to a Mike Schubert show, it is Panera rules. You bus your own shit.
And we have caffeine drinks that will stop your heart.
Yes,
anyway,
for sure.
Let's talk about basketball. So we need to prepare to do that. And in order to prepare to do that, we'll go to the Teal Memorial Locker Room, which also has very well-labeled trash and recycling.
Yeah, bins. And nice beverages, but none that will make your heart stop.
Exactly. You know who makes our heart beat, not stop?
Nice transition. And I would say our patrons, particularly our producer level patrons. Shout out to them.
Yes. Shout out to all our patrons. Shout out to our producer level patrons. Polly Bird, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry courtside watching the Valkyries.
Yeah, just kind of manifesting it. You'd have to think he's going to go hang there.
I would be floored if that does not happen.
Floored floor seats, floor side. Ooh, I feel like there's a floor situation there.
Yep, we're there. We're there. Hi, Trish, Chase Underulo, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby as a vampire, Chelsea's cousin, Ginger Spurs boy, Balls to the Wolves, and Mats Furley.
Yes, and before we get to our sponsor, another special shout out to anybody who DM'd us and said, hey, you made our Spotify Wrapped. That makes us feel really good.
Yes.
Thank you so much for listening. We tried to repost as many as we could, but it does make us feel very, very loved, and we are honored to be in your top five, like the old Charles Barkley commercial about Singular Wireless or something like that.
T-Mobile sidekick.
Then go to Subway sandwich, get a foot long. They said it could never be done.
But also, speaking of brands and stuff, you know what we've got going on for this episode?
We've got Shaker and Spoon.
We do. They are sponsoring us. You can go to shakerandspoon.com/horse and you get $20 off a box. Holiday season right now. If you want to do something cool that's a gift that is a little off the beaten path, you get a Shaker and Spoon box. And then you're giving the gift of fun drinks and knowledge and entertainment to someone or to yourself. And all you got to do is supply the booze and they supply all the other stuff. You're going home to your parents. Your parents probably have a liquor cabinet full of stuff they're not using. So just, you know, get the Shaker and Spoon box delivered to your parents' place, and then boom, you can finally use that aged rum they've had in there forever. Maybe this is just my parents who, like, don't drink much.
They bought regular rum, and now it has turned into aged rum.
Now it's cask barrel aged, but if you go to shakerandspoon.com/horse, you get $20 off, which is pretty sweet, and the boxes are usually $40 or $50, so that's like half off. What's not to love? Now, before we continue on, we did mention the Patreon, so I want to say, by the time this episode comes out, we will have new Patreon tiers. We will have put a post up about this, but basically on December 12th, the Patreon changed from charging every episode to charging monthly. And what happens with that is that we've set up three new tiers, which are called Bang, Double Bang, and Triple Bang. Or are we doing Bang, 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 and Bang, Bang, Bang?
No, you had it right the first time.
Okay, cool. So Bang, Double Bang, Triple Bang. And those are the new tiers, which are going to be at $5, $10, and $25 a month. The other existing tiers, because we usually would have two episodes a month, they are getting auto-doubled. So if you were in, say, the $2 a month tier and you don't change, you will get charged $4 a month. We would recommend that you move to the new tiers, but, you know, you're not going to, like, lose necessarily access and all that kind of stuff. But switch on over to the Bang, Double Bang, and Triple Bang tiers, which have more clear situations in terms of, like, what each tier gets and kind of simplifying things and making some updates, like we're not doing the jerseys anymore and we're changing who has access to, like, the video posts and stuff like that. But that will all be in place. You may notice that your December bill will be more expensive than normal because you got charged for one episode and then the monthly switch, but we intentionally did not charge you at the end of November. So your November bill was less, your December bill will be more, they will even out. And then going forward into the new year, it's all normal, monthly charge for the end of time. And that's the Patreon situation. There will be a post up on the Patreon that explains this as
well. And I hope that within this new tier system, we do manifest a Mike Breen triple bang, the first of its kind, because I don't believe it's ever happened. There have been, I think, six double bangs, the most recent of which was the Dante DiVincenzo double bang, but triple bang would be fun. And the other thing that I noticed, which is extra fun, is that when we were trying to come up with, like, what the tier should be, we were like, all right, should we do, like, a Breen thing and then a Walt Clyde Frazier thing and then a Stacey King thing? He's the Bulls commentator. But I've been watching some Bulls games as much as I can stomach. And he actually does, when the Bulls hit a three, he'll either say sriracha, which is, like, you know, getting hot sauce, or he'll say bang, bang, bang. So he says bang, bang, bang during Bulls games. So it kind of works on multiple levels. There you go.
There we go. So that's the Patreon update there. So now at this point, unless you're listening on Patreon, where you get access to ad-free and early release episodes, you will hear words from some sponsors who help us just make a little bit more money off this podcast, not be in the red. But once those ads are complete, we'll get back into this episode of Horse. But if it's on Patreon where you're listening, it's going to go right into the next part. Adam, what are you up to? What's going on?
All right, I've got a few new things to add. This one is just kind of a fun, random one. This is not me headlining a show, but I am going to be doing one spot on a show in Ireland. My girlfriend Celia and I are going to Dublin over the holidays, just like to go. And I was able to line up one spot. I actually was offered more, but I was like, I'm here to have fun and not do comedy. But if you want to see me at Peter Kearney's Pub. I'll be there at 9 p.m. local time in Dublin on Thursday, December 26th, the day after Christmas. You can see me in Ireland one night only for, you know, 12 minutes or however much they give me. And we'll see if my very American jokes work. This is the other stuff that I have coming up. So if you are in the Albany area or like Southern Vermont, Western Mass, I've got three headlining shows coming up. So you're going to have a couple chances to see me. On New Year's Eve, I'm going to be headlining the Albany Funny Bone. Then on January 31st, I'm going to be headlining the Park Theater in Glens Falls, New York. And on February 1st, which is a Saturday, I will be at the Bennington Theater in Bennington, Vermont. All three of those are within like a 1 or 2 hour drive of one another. So if you're available for any of those, please come out. Other things that I have, Sunday, January 12th, I will be headlining Zany's Chicago. There's a potential that I might be in Tampa in January. I'll keep you all posted on that. It's looking like January 29th at the Laughing Skull Lounge in Atlanta. Those tickets are not live yet, but stay tuned for that. And then in February, the weekend of February 14th and 15th, I'm headlining the Dallas Comedy Club in Dallas, Texas. That's four shows. The following weekend, I will be in Boulder, Colorado at a place called Comic Sense, like the coin, C-E-N-T-S. And then final ones to promote, I will be back in Bozeman, Montana on Friday, May 30th. So you got a lot of time before that one, but that's going to be two shows. It's a really great club. I got to do that earlier this year, and it's awesome. And then I will be in Las Vegas for a full week, which is objectively too long to be in that place. But I will be there telling jokes at Brad Garrett's Comedy Club from June 2nd through June 8th. That's what I got.
Ooh, you could probably catch Aces games. That's going to be during the season.
I thought of that immediately, and I looked it up when they released the schedule like a week ago. No Aces in town while I'm there. I'm very disappointed.
Are they just on like a huge road trip during that time?
Weirdly, they only have like two games during that span, and they're both on the road, which is a bummer. What I really want is to someday get booked out there during summer league games, because that would be super fun. And they have games like during the day.
You should look at the schedule, because I think there is a point in time where in summer league and the WNBA cross over. So you could maybe like see both. Right. You could see some garbage basketball and then the Las Vegas Aces play.
Exactly, yeah. What do you have coming up? Have you added anything, other new stuff to promote?
I don't think anything added other than just like the big chunk of 2025 stuff that we've already booked out. So by the time you're hearing this, you can go to Austin, Texas today, maybe, if we're depending on when you're listening to this, December 15th and 16th, I'll be in Dallas and Austin. But then in 2025, I've got shows in Hartford, Baltimore, Richmond, Houston, St. Paul, Milwaukee, Des Moines, Chicago, Columbus, Cleveland, Montreal, and Buffalo. And that goes all the way through May. So you can go to my website, shub.es/tour, to check out those dates. Most of them are TNO shows, the ones that are in new cities. So Baltimore, Richmond, Des Moines, Montreal, and Buffalo. Those are half TNO, half Potterless. And I'm super stoked about it. There's already like some shows already have a bunch, like Des Moines is hyped for the show and we've already sold a bunch of tickets. Similarly, St. Paul as well. So those are going to be very fun. I'm super stoked about them. So come on through, say hey.
Cool.
Alrighty. Now, normally we would have NBQ&A here, but we need more NBQ&As, correct?
Yes, we do. We will accept NBQ&As, WNBQ&As, any QB, NBB,
any combination of those letters and an ampersand.
A question that is related to basketball will do. So if you do have any basketball-related questions of any sort, the best way to reach us is through our email. That is horsehoopspod@gmail.com. You can DM us if you want to as well, but I will say, as the person who is usually checking these things, the easiest way for it to not get lost is to send an email, and then we can add it to our nice Google Doc of questions. So we will take your questions on or off the air.
Yes, and if you're a patron, you get special preference.
Special double secret priority.
Exactly. But now we can get into Full Court Press. Get it? Like the news?
I do.
So there is a bit of news. Let's start with, I think, the most dramatic of anything. At the top, the WNBA expansion draft happened.
Ooh, baby.
Spicy.
Yeah, and it's the first expansion draft in the NBA or WNBA in a while, I feel like.
Yeah, first time since the Charlotte Bobcats, I guess, would be the last time a team was added.
Maybe, yeah, because the WNBA teams that have existed have been around for a bit, I feel.
Right. Yeah, I think they've only had teams move to new cities. I don't know that they've had like proper expansion. So for anyone unfamiliar, an expansion draft, whether it's the NBA or the WNBA, happens when a new team or new teams are brought into the league. And depending on NBA, WNBA, they have different numbers of players you can protect on your roster. So for this WNBA draft, you could protect 6 people, which is not that much. Like, that's your starting 5, your first person off the bench, and then anybody else is fair game.
Right.
And then the new team, in this case, the Golden State Valkyries, they were able to select a roster of 12 people. So they were allowed to take one unrestricted free agent, so someone who's currently not signed with a team, and then they could take one player from all of the other teams. Obviously, there being 12 teams, one team would not have a selection.
It's like White Elephant, but you get to have professional athletes.
Yes. So what's interesting about it and makes the viewing process of it more dramatic is that it's not public who's protected. So when you're watching it, you don't know exactly who's up there. And I didn't watch it live. I watched a recap after, which for draft type things is very nice. I was able to get all of the information in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds instead of like watching it on TV over a 30 minute. What was cool about the way the Valkyries did it, though, is that they had people from the Bay Area announcing the picks, and they had, I think, 3 different people go up and read off 4 names at a time.
Yeah.
So I believe it was their new coach. It was E-40, Area rapper, and then Baron Davis, who played in the Golden State Warriors, went to UCLA, so like very California-focused dude.
Yeah.
And they read off the 12 selections that they had made. And there's some spiciness in the picks. So the unrestricted free agent that they picked was Monique Billings, who is good. And she was on the Mercury this past year. And then they selected from all the other teams except for my beloved Seattle Storm. So they didn't want anyone from the Storm, which like could be seen as an insult of like, we don't want anybody on your roster, or just kind of like, we're not a very deep team. We're kind of a top heavy team. I feel like if Nika Mule does not have a ACL tear in her first game after the season playing internationally, then maybe she is selected. But my Storm was safe, but someone was taken from every other team.
Quick question about the unrestricted free agent thing, and I don't know if you know the answer. Once they select that person, is there, like, how is there any guarantee that they'll come up with a contract that both sides agree to?
I am not sure exactly how that works, but what's interesting is that they, like, I'm looking at the selection here, and it lists Monique Billings as, like, taken from the Mercury, and they didn't take another player from the Mercury. So maybe it's just, like, I guess some... I'm not exactly sure. I guess like if you're a team, you can't protect someone who is not on your roster in theory. So that also could like switch up some of the selections. Like, I guess the Valkyries could have taken Diana Taurasi because she's an unrestricted free agent. Like that would have been wild, especially because it's not confirmed if she's going to play next year. But like that would have been wild. But yeah, the other people that were taken after Monique Billings, you've got Veronica Burton from The Sun, Maria Condi from The Sky, Temi Fagbenle from The Fever, which I out loud said she wasn't protected when they picked her. And like, she's pretty good. She had like a bit of an up and down season, but like she had some promise. She was on The Fever and she had some good chemistry with Caitlin Clark. Like, I was genuinely floored that she was not protected. Like, I don't know if this will ever happen, but I would love to I guess it'll never be public because you don't want the players to be offended, but like, God, I would love to see all of the lists of who was protected and who wasn't protected, just for the drama of it all.
Yeah. I wonder too, though, and again, maybe you don't know the answer, but maybe it's a situation where if a team has someone under a contract, it's like an easy way to get rid of that contract if they know that not protecting someone will elicit them being picked by said expansion team.
Yeah. That's definitely been a thing that's happened in NBA expansion drafts. Like, they will intentionally not protect someone that, like, might be good, but they don't want to deal with the contract of anymore. Yeah. Say, like, the Bulls not protecting Zach LaVine. Like, right. Yes, he's better than a lot of the players on the Bulls, but they are, like, actively trying to not pay him money. So that is a thing that'll happen in expansion drafts. With Temi, I guess, like, she's 31, so she's not super young, and the rest of the Fever super young, so maybe they were just, like, she doesn't fit the timeline. But, like, I was quite shocked that she was taken. Then you've got Carly Lighty from the Dallas Wings. Kate Martin from the Aces, also very good, but that was just like, there's six really good people on the Aces. Like, they had basically a six woman rotation going once everybody got back from injury. So, like, it makes sense, but, like, that's a huge pick. And Kate's super excited about it. How could you not be? Like, she'll get proper playing time. Like, once everyone was back from injury, she wasn't really playing for the Aces. So, that's exciting. Ilania Rupert from the Dream. Stephanie Talbot from the Sparks. Stephanie Talbot can hoop. She was on the Storm. Kayla Thornton from the Liberty. Julie Vanloo from the Mystics, who was a rookie, but, like, played internationally for a while. So, you know, one of those, like, rookie in quotation marks. And then Cecilia Zan Dallassini from the Lynx. Baron Davis had a fun time pronouncing her name as well. So those were the selections. And much like any expansion draft, like, they're not going to be good.
Sure.
You look at this roster and you're like, all right, you know, Monique is good and you have some other people with upside, but, like, you don't look at this roster and you're like, ooh. They will also get, I believe, the fifth pick in the upcoming WNBA draft. And that's also normal for if there's an NBA expansion draft. Usually you get, I think, the fourth pick in the draft and you don't have a shot at the lottery. So we'll see who they take in the WNBA draft as well. So, like, their roster is not set, but it is mostly set. And it's just fun. Expansion drafts are just fun.
Like, fun hypothetical. Let's say there were an NBA expansion draft that worked the same. Who would the Knicks six players be who they protect?
Well, I think they protect more. Let's see. NBA expansion draft.
Oh, yeah. I guess because the rosters
are
bigger.
How many protections? Just because it's bigger. Let's see. Let's bring it. Of course, Google AI autofill is about the WNBA one. So just trash. Okay. So according to the NBA, at least the last time they did it, you got to protect eight people who are under contract.
Okay.
So, man, I mean, if you're the Knicks, let's pull up the Knicks roster. I mean, assuming, like, everyone's under contract, you would have to protect Karl Anthony Towns, Brunson, Mikal Bridges, OG, Josh Hart, Deuce McBride. And then we're actually in an okay spot because then, like, you could protect, like, Sims, our center, and then Mitchell Robinson, like, if you really wanted to be safe. Like, the Knicks actually are in a fantastic position because we basically have, like,
like a tight rotation.
Seven to eight guys who are worth playing on the court.
The reason I was asking was because, like, I think about a team like the Bulls where they've got good enough players that there are probably some that would be obvious to protect, but then you've got, like, a rookie who isn't great now, but you don't want to give up the potential of how good that person can be. So, you know.
Yeah, I think it would be very interesting, and it's something that, like, might have to happen in the near future because there's all the rumblings of adding a Seattle team and a Vegas team and then maybe, like, a Mexico City team or something down the line. So that'll be very, very, very spicy. And, yeah, you'll get more. I think with the NBA, especially now that the NBA has all of these very strict contract and salary cap rules because of the new collective bargaining agreement with the first apron and the second apron, like, you could see some really interesting protection strategies there that aren't necessarily as prominent in the WNBA just by, like, the way that the league salary caps is structured. So whenever it happens for the NBA, that'll be
related
messy.
Question, speaking of messy and other things, as someone who recently had dinner at your house, and thank you again, do you have a first apron and a second apron, or do you just have one that you wash?
I just have one that I mainly use, but we do have two aprons.
There's a second apron in the house.
There is a second apron so that, you know, if Kelly's helping, we both need aprons. But yes, we do have multiple aprons. All right, let's move on to other stuff. We're recording this on December 10th. Today, the Miami Heat have announced that they are open to accepting offers from Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy Butler has stated he would prefer to play for a contending team. Very interesting. dramatic. I guess the Heat, who are doing like all right, recognize that like they're not looking like they're going to win this year. So maybe try to trade him before you lose him for nothing, because I think this is the last year of his contract. They clearly fizzled out on signing any sort of extension. So could have a Jimmy Butler thing. This feels ripe of Los Angeles Lakers to me.
I was just, I mean, I kind of feel that way anytime someone is up for discussions, but I feel like of everyone in the NBA who has never won a championship, I honestly feel like Jimmy Butler is maybe the top guy, or like top three for me, of people who I would love to see win a ring.
Mm-hmm. And you look at the Lakers right now, they're 13-11. They're eighth in the West. Like, they're not like knocking on the door, and they need something to switch it up. They do have some young guys with promise, and they still have, I think,
Bronny
at least
not
one
being
pick
one
that
of
they
them.
Can
Sorry,
trade. Bronny not being one of them. But, you know, he's in the G League now, doing fine. Like, good for them. Good, fine. But we'll see. There's some other teams I could see doing it. Like, the Clippers have been weirdly surprisingly good. I could see them trying to do something.
Yeah.
The Lakers for sure. The Timberwolves, if they're in, like, panic mode. But, like, do they really want Jimmy back? So you got to kind of think, like, who's a team? I feel like who could he end up on is a team that had higher expectations that is off to a slow start. And it's funny that two of his previous teams where the relationship did not go
well. The Sixers
and the Timberwolves are both like right in that description. Right. But I don't think that would happen. And it seems like he would want to be on a team with more contention. There's like some interesting possibilities, like do the Warriors go for it? Like, I don't know. It's hard because a lot of these teams who are at the top right now are in positions where it seems like they have a good roster that they wouldn't want to shake up. Like, the Knicks aren't going to want to shake it up. The Cavs aren't going to want to shake it up. The Magic aren't going to want to shake it up. The Grizzlies, maybe. The Rockets, maybe. Like,
I say let them play for the Valkyries. Fuck it.
Ooh, yeah, why not? But it just kind of feels like we're going to see a Lakers move. Like, this feels like exactly what they're looking for. I don't know if they have enough, if there's another team that'll be competitive towards it.
I've also wondered if the Lakers might be in on Zach LaVine. I think, obviously, they'd rather have Jimmy Butler, but that feels like a good fit.
I think for them now, Jimmy Butler is who they would be more excited to get, but Zach LaVine, I think, is a more realistic thing to get in terms of, like, they wouldn't have to give up as much.
Right.
But if you're the Heat, especially if you're Pat Riley, you're saying, okay, give us Dalton Knecht, your rookie, mm-hmm. who's playing very well. Like, you know that's going to be the line in the sand for the Heat. And they've played hardball with other trades.
I also love that his jersey number is 4, like Knecht 4.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Good for him. Good for him.
I think that's his nickname.
That's good. Also, speaking of nicknames, they are now calling Dyson Daniels, who's playing out of his mind mm-hmm. for the Hawks, which is great. And he's like getting all these steals and blocks, like defensive wizard, but he's also scoring a lot too. He's Australian. They're calling him the Great Barrier Thief. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yep.
It's so good. We have so many nicknames that are just initials and numbers that aren't fun. And the Great Barrier Thief is just delicious.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh.
No, no.
It's so great. Makes me so happy. So that's up with Jimmy Butler. Now, we also, for a more comedic thing, there is something going on with the Knicks, my beloved New York Knicks, who are just fun. We're just fun, which is wild. You've got OG Anunoby grabbing microphones in post-game interviews after he's explicitly told not to. You've got Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson being their goofy selves, and that happened again. First, did you see the Josh Hart making fun of Jalen Brunson's head size with the oversized hat thing?
I did not.
So, you know, those like goofy, like big hat things where it's like a hat, but then it mm-hmm. looks like a big styrofoam giant hat. They're interviewing Josh Hart about it. He's got a big like Washington Commanders hat because he's from the area and likes that football team. And he's saying, they're asking him about the hat. And he's like, yeah, you know, I was in the store and I saw these hats and they had different sizes. You know, they had small, medium, large, and then one that had JB with an asterisk next to it. And then it said Jalen Brunson. So I had to pick it up. And it's this like comically large hat. So that's already funny. But then the funnier thing is Jalen Brunson is right there. Like, Jalen Brunson comes into frame to yell at Josh Hart for like owing him $100 because I think they bet when their two football teams played each other. So to make that joke, it's hilarious. For Jalen Brunson to be right there. So
does he have a big head?
Oh, huge head. He's got a very large head. Josh Hart makes fun of it all the time.
Funny.
And it's like a good insult thing because like he does have a big head and it's not like mean. Like, it's just like some people just have big heads. Like, I got a long head. Mm. So like it seems like Jalen, like, it's a thing you can make fun of your friend about, but like, or like, it's annoying, but not like too much. Like, it's not like too personal or like too mean. There's lots of times where he spoke in front of him for that. But then the thing that happened recently is they interviewed Jalen Brunson, some media reporters, about the in-season tournament, because now the Knicks have won their division in the in-season tournament and they're going to be there. And if the team wins the in-season tournament, sorry, the Emirates NBA Cup.
Yes.
If you win the Emirates NBA Cup, you get $500,000. Every single player gets $500,000. And if you're on a minimum contract, like, that might be how much you're making. So you can basically double your salary. So Jalen Brunson was asked about this and he was like, look, we really want to win the NBA Cup because the Emirates NBA Cup, because then all of my teammates who are on the lower end of the salary spectrum, they can get a big payday and we want to do it for them. And then the reporters asked Josh about it. They said, Jalen said that he wants to win money for the people who aren't making as much money on the team. Is that why you would like to win? And he said, no, I'm trying to buy a new watch. And then he name drops this new watch that is like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Hey, we all have our own motivations.
It's so good. And I love that Josh Hart is like, I don't know how you become this kind of guy where, like, I guess you just have to keep repeatedly doing it and then also be a nice person where, like, you know that he doesn't mean this. Like, you know that he is not serious about it. So you can say something that sounds like you're a jerk, but you don't mean it. Like, that's a great place to be in comedically. And I'm very happy that Josh Hart does this, and I'm so happy he's on my team. If he wasn't on my team, I'd be so jealous of someone being this funny. It makes me really happy.
Yeah. The Knicks are they're a good hang. It's just good vibes all the way around.
Good vibes. Final thing of Full Court Press. We had a situation of fines that I just find funny. Jaylen Brown dunked on Isaiah Stewart, Beef Stew, a good nickname, of the Detroit Pistons, and he then did a slicing throat gesture, and he got fined $25,000 for this. Valid. Like, there's certain celebrations that players do that get fines, and if you threaten to kill a dude after you dunk on him, yes, probably ought to be fined. I don't know that he got a tech. I don't think he might have. I don't think he did in the clip that I saw, which was ridiculous. So he got fined $25,000. Then Zach Collins got ejected from a game because he got a technical foul. Then he argued, and then he got a second technical foul. And he then flipped off the referee, gave him the bird, and he got fined $35,000. So it is $10,000 more to tell a referee, I don't like you, than it is to tell another player, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, I found that interesting.
Kind of funny. It's just, I get, like, there's another level of, like, disrespect towards the referees, but I don't know the calculus of threatening murder less severe than telling someone the gesture of F.
Well, it begs the question, what if you did the throat cutting gesture to a ref?
Oh, with your middle finger.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what would happen, actually. But what was funny is the broadcasters, I forget who the Spurs were playing, I think it was with the other team, and the broadcasters go, oh, Zach tells the refs he's number one.
That's
which
funny.
Which was very good. Yeah. So yeah, that concludes Full Court Press. Get it like the news. Now we can move on to your That Actually Happened. What do you got, Adam?
Let's do it. So for today's That Actually Happened, I want to give a shout out to a listener of ours, Mitchell, who wrote in last December, so it's taken a full year, but Mitchell said
we
the
did
following.
It.
Exactly. So what Mitchell said last December was, hey guys, I love the video version of the in-season tournament courts. I love listening to your podcast on my drive to work, but listening to a podcast while I eat my lunch is comparatively boring, so I loved having that extra visual engagement with the two of you. I believe Adam mentioned how the Trailblazers court uses a pattern to honor one of their great coaches, Dr. Jack. I did a quick Wikipedia search on him, and he seemed like he had quite the career. I could do my own research on him, but I would far prefer to hear you two tell the story about Dr. Jack. I think you will have some interesting takes and things to offer. All the best, Mitchell. Well, Mitchell, sorry that it took a year, but I've got some good news. Today is that day. I proudly present the man behind the plaid, the life and times of Dr. Jack Ramsey. Before we get to that, though, I do want to quickly acknowledge that Mitchell left an unrelated P.S. after that email that was too good not to read out loud. Mitchell said, P.S., I'm taking the Hornets in-season court number one overall, entirely original and different color scheme and a wild slogan with a cool logo. However, I am absolutely disgusted that Miles Bridges is back in the NBA, so fuck him.
Let's go.
Well said, Mitchell.
There we
are. Agree.
We love that. I'm very excited about this because the only thing I know about this guy is he's the reason they do the plaid stuff, and I know nothing else about him, except that he's probably a good dude if they memorialize sure. him so frequently.
Exactly, yes. So let's talk about Dr. Jack Ramsey, who was born John Travilla Ramsey, because Jack is a nickname for John, and because babies can't be born with doctorates. I just wanted to make sure that people understood that that's how that works.
That would be wild if, like, there was some sort of situation where, like, right off the bat, some college is like, we're giving him an honorary doctorate.
we have a good feeling about this one.
Got a good vibe. Yeah. You two are smart.
Born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania in 1925, Ramsey participated in sports from a young age at the encouragement of his parents. He graduated from Upper Darby High School in Delaware County, Pennsylvania, which, fun fact, is also the high school that served as the inspiration for the film Mean Girls, thanks to one of Upper Whoa. Darby's other most notable alums and my birthday buddy, Tina Fey.
Okay. Yeah. That's fun. That is a,
That's
fun,
a fun
fact.
Tidbit.
A fun fact.
In any case, Ramsey was not a mean girl, but Ramsey did excel in basketball, baseball, and soccer in high school, later being named to the school's Wall of Fame in 1979, which I'm going to assume is their Hall of Fame, but it would be funny if he got named to the Wall of Fame, but not the Hall of Fame.
There's tiers. Yeah. There's the Wall of Fame. There's the Room of Fame.
And the Hall triple of Fame. Bank. Despite his sports prowess, his mother encouraged him to focus on academics, and he stayed close to home, attending St. Joseph's University in Philly. Interestingly, Ramsey's college year spanned from 1942 to 1949, not because he was Van Wilder, but because after 1 year of college, Ramsey put his studies on hold for 3 years to serve in the U.S. Navy during World War II before returning to college in 1946. Once he was back, Ramsey played both baseball and basketball in college and ultimately graduated in 1949, becoming the first person in his family to earn a bachelor's degree. Even more impressive, after his playing and coaching career, he also earned a master's degree and ultimately a doctorate, hence Dr. Jack Ramsey, from UPenn. Not too shabby.
Yeah, hey, good school. Indeed. Good school, which I learned recently since I did a lecture there. They have an ice skating rink on campus.
That is pretty, like, not even for the hockey team, just like to skate.
It was across the street from the place we performed. It said University of Pennsylvania Ice Skating Rink. And I was like, yo.
That's pretty sweet. You should have tried to skate there.
I was like, the show's canceled, everyone. I'm going skating.
You can all come, but I
will be poorly skating because I'm not very good at it and podcasting at the same time.
I mean, that is niche. That's a niche podcast right there. Anyway, let's take a step back, which is always my favorite basketball transition.
Nice.
After graduating from college in 1949, Ramsey went on to play for six seasons for the nearby Harrisburg Senators of the Eastern Professional Basketball League, the league that was ultimately rebranded as the CBA, which of course was the precursor to the G League, as we now know it to be. Ramsey left.
And we did a whole episode about the CBA.
Yes,
so search that in our discography and you'll find more information.
Ramsey left the Senators in 1951 and joined another Pennsylvania-based team, the Sunbury Mercurys, where he played until 1955.
He joined another team, the House of Representatives.
Oh my gosh. It was at this time that Ramsey began coaching high school basketball to supplement his income because, and this might shock you, there were not a lot of Supermax deals in the EBPL circa 1950. Speaking of salaries, Ramsey's first higher-profile coaching job came when he was hired by his alma mater, St. Joseph's University, in 1955 for a salary of $3,500 a year. Inflation into account, that would apparently be around $41,000 today, so a pretty modest living. But for the next 11 years, Ramsey would lead the Hawks to great success, including a Final Four appearance in 1961, multiple first-place finishes at an overall record of 234-72. To put that in NBA terms, if you're talking about an 82-game season, that would be a pace of 63 wins a year. So very, very good.
Yeah.
After this run of success at the college level, Ramsey had caught the eye of NBA owners, and in 1968, he was hired to coach the Philadelphia 76ers, continuing a borderline absurd number of Pennsylvania-based jobs. He led the team to the playoffs in three of his 4 years in Philly before finally, and I'm assuming begrudgingly, moving to another state when he was hired by the Buffalo Braves, now the Los Angeles Clippers, a wild tale in its own right that we have also discussed on a previous episode of Horse, if you want to look at our discography, as Mike alluded to. But during his four seasons with the Braves, Ramsey's overall coaching record was a pedestrian 158-170. But his pedigree was such that after being fired from that job, the Portland Trailblazers hired him immediately. They took a chance on him. And it was here in Portland that his legacy was truly cemented, and he would spend the next decade as the head coach of the Trailblazers. Prior to his arrival, the team had only been in existence for six seasons and had never made the playoffs. However, their best player, Bill Walton, was starting to come into his own, and the timing was right for the Blazers to finally make a run. Now, a lot of times it takes a while to transform a team, but in this case, Ramsey's impact was immediate. The team won 22 of its first 31 games, and while they didn't keep up that torrid pace, they ultimately finished that season at 49-33, making the playoffs for the very first time in franchise history. Worth noting, at this time, the Western Conference was comprised of 11 teams instead of its current 15, and only 6 teams made the playoffs. The Blazers finished 3rd in the conference that year behind the Lakers and the Nuggets. And then in the first round of the playoffs, the Blazers dispatched the Chicago Bulls, who were actually in the Western Conference at that time, which I don't think I even knew, but the Blazers won 2-1 back in the days of the best-of-3 first-round series. They then upset the second-seeded Denver Nuggets 4-2 in round 2, and then swept the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar-led Lakers in 4 games in a shocking Western Conference Finals. Finally, they defeated Dr. J and the number 1-seeded Philadelphia 76ers 4-2 in the NBA Finals, securing their first and, to date, only championship. The fact that this remains Portland's sole NBA championship to this day is, in my opinion, a huge part of Ramsey's ongoing legacy. The following season, the Blazers were poised to go back-to-back, starting the season a blistering 50-10.
Wow.
Yeah. Everything was lined up perfectly, and then, in an instant, the dream was over when Bill Walton broke his foot and missed the rest of the season. This would be the beginning of Walton's career-long injury struggles, a trend that sadly continued with many notable Portland big men over the years, including Sam Bowie, who was famously drafted 2nd overall in 1984, one pick before, and I want to make sure I'm pronouncing this correctly, Michael Jordan, and Greg Oden, who was drafted 1st overall by the Blazers in 2007, one pick before Kevin Durant. Neither of those people could stay healthy, unfortunately. But going back to that day and age, while the Blazers would continue to play well under Ramsey's leadership, they would only win 2 more playoff series throughout his tenure. Ramsey closed out his career as coach of the Indiana Pacers, and when he retired from coaching in 1989, his 864 career wins were 2nd all-time, behind only the legendary Red Auerbach. In 1992, he was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame, and 1 year later, the Blazers symbolically retired the number 77 in his honor to memorialize the Blazers' lone championship win in 1977. Also, I was thinking, has anyone worn that? I feel like I can picture like Vladimir Radmanovich or something wearing 77. I feel like there's a random person.
I hate that I know the answer.
Who is it?
And it is none other than Andrea Bargnani for the New York Knickerbockers.
Oh, no.
Because he wore 7 with the Raptors and Melo wore 7, and then we traded for him, so he picked 77. And now I can only think of when he shot that 3-pointer when he shouldn't have, and Walt Frazier said, "What is he doing, folks?"
Oh, no. Well, I did not expect my 77-related question to trigger such a moment for you, and I'm very sorry.
Really dark era. Really,
sure,
really dark
era. But you know
era.
What?
I traded Steve Novak for
but
him.
Look
Ugh.
At what they have
it
now.
It all got us here.
Yep.
Every misstep mm-hmm. has gotten us to the fun New York
Absolutely.
Knickerbockers.
In his post-coaching years, Ramsey worked as a TV commentator for the 76ers and the Miami Heat, and he also called 15 NBA Finals for ESPN Radio. When he passed away on April 28th, 2014, the Blazers' official press release stated, "His colorful coaching style was matched only by his equally colorful fashion sense on the sidelines." Blazers Owen Paul Allen went on to say, quote, "The Portland Trail Blazers and indeed the NBA have lost an authentic original in Dr. Jack Ramsey. In leading this franchise to its first NBA championship, Dr. Jack set a standard of excellence for his players, coaches, and all who cross his path. He was the rarest of men with a unique style that was inspirational and motivational about basketball and life itself. We loved him as a coach, as a broadcaster, and as a human being," end quote. And so we remember Dr. Jack Ramsey, who would have turned 100 this coming February. And the next time you see the Blazers wearing plaid jerseys or playing on a plaid court, you'll know why.
That's so cool. There's a couple cool things to close it out. One, I like that they retired a number that's actually a number, because what you'll see, and the Knicks have done this and some other teams do this, they'll retire a number for a coach and it'll be like the number of wins or like
right.
the area code or something, or like some places have retired like a microphone or, mm-hmm. you know, like emoji or something. It's like, that's not a jersey. Like, you can't retire.
I think if you retire a microphone, the PA announcer should just have to scream. You can't,
they
no microphones.
Into a
yeah.
bullhorn. 3-pointer for Carmelo Anthony. But I like that they retired a real number.
Yeah,
like
cool.
No one can actually be 77. That's cool. And I like that we have someone now that we've memorialized for fashion-related reasons that doesn't suck. Like, Craig Sager was a not nice person.
Is that really
so
true?
I think he had, like, weird stuff with women.
Oh,
like,
that's a bummer.
But he also, like, Yeah, and like it's tough because I think I don't know if he like gave a lot to charity. Like people said he was nice, and like he tragically passed. But like I also think he had like some weird like allegations. So to have a guy that was like,
well, I mean, Walt Clyde Frazier, good fashion, no nefarious deeds that I'm aware of.
And the only difference is that Walt Clyde Frazier will never die because I won't be able to handle it.
I get that. Yeah.
But yeah, thank you. I'm so glad I know about this now, because I've known about this guy, but not like about this guy.
Well, thank you. Thank you to Mitchell for the great recommendation.
Alrighty. Well, similarly, my 3-on-3 is also inspired by a listener email.
Cool.
1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1. 3-on-3.
So shout out to Tomi, who sent us an email on November 15th of this year. So quicker turnaround on this one. But
way to make me look bad.
Tomi's subject line was bang with a lot of A's and N's and G's and exclamation points. The message reads, "Hi, Mike and Adam. I'm still catching up on all your older episodes, but I want to say that I've listened to every single podcast that Mike has made and quite a few that Adam has guested. Your guys' humor makes my day, and honestly, it's just so fun. And thanks for helping me grow closer with my brother because of my newfound understanding of basketball. You might have already done this, but I think a great 3-on-3 would be color schemes for NBA teams. I understand Mike is quite the color-loving boy. So much thanks and love, Tomi Wilson." Now, Tomi must be from a different country because they have spelled color C-O-L-O-U-R.
Mm-hmm,
like I'm playing Neopets, but I am, in fact, a big color or Kalur loving boy, and I am very excited for this 3-on-3.
Listen, there's no I in team, but sometimes there's a U in color.
Exactly. But I think this is a fun one because we've talked about like particular jerseys and stuff, but now I get to just talk about like overall schemes so I can span like multiple teams or different eras of a team. And I think that's a fun opportunity. So very sweet email and a very good suggestion. So I will begin with the bad so that we can get into the good. I will say that my number 3 worst NBA color schemes, this one, just going with a team, the Dallas Mavericks. Mm-hmm. Mainly because all they do at this point now is dark blue, light blue, and silver or gray. And they used to have a fun, like, royal blue, bright green scheme back in the 90s. And weirdly, as I was looking up all of the different color schemes that teams are using now and had in the past, there are not a lot of teams with green. Currently, you've got the Celtics and the Bucks. And that's it. So there's two teams. I guess the Timberwolves also have lime green.
There aren't even teams that have it as like an accent color?
No, I mean, the Timberwolves have lime green as an accent color. The Jazz had it as an accent color before they did their black and yellow switch that they are trying to abandon as fast as they legally can. Yeah. And then I guess the Pelicans use it as an accent color when they do their New Orleans stuff. But like, there's not a lot of green in the league. So definitely makes me upset that the Mavericks used to have some green and now they just have their colors. And like, even in like the Dirk era, they had those like funky swoopy Mavs jerseys that I think might have been designed by a certain rapper who's under a lot of fire currently. So maybe we won't compliment these jerseys too much because...
Did he? Jay-Z? Who are we talking about?
Did he design them? Wait, I don't know.
Were there seriously NBA Sean John uniforms?
I think that's the thing. All right, let's just do it. NBA Sean Combs designed jerseys. I think that was the
thing. I don't
remember
that at all.
Let's see. Did he? The Diddy jersey. Yep. So those green ones, I'll Google it. But those are Diddy jerseys.
Okay.
Let me G-chat it. Once I send it to you, you'll be like, oh yeah, these. Those were designed by Diddy. I don't know why I knew this, but I guess I've been a basketball nerd for a very long time. But those.
I do like those.
Yeah, they were like, I think when they came out, I thought they were kind of funky looking, but I think as time has gone on, it's one of those like, oh yeah, those were fresh. Like they were at least different and fun and the font was funky, but like they don't really use them anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, now it's just navy, light blue, white. Or silver or black. And I just feel like we could get more. There's so many blue teams there. Mm-hmm. And I think like this isn't necessarily just color scheme, but like their font is boring. Like the Mavs are in desperate need of a refresh. It's been so long that they've had this kind of situation going on. And it's just boring when your color scheme is one color, a different shade of your color, and then gray. Like, come on, give me something. Give me something, Dallas. So that's my first selection. So my number 2 bad color scheme is red, white, and blue when it's not thematic. If your team has an excuse to be red, white, and blue, I'll take it. If your team does not have an excuse to be red, white, and blue, be something else.
So you're saying like 76ers, of course, they're fine. Like mm-hmm. playing
76ers. Yeah. They can do it. The Washington Wizards, they can do it. Mm-hmm. The Detroit Pistons, you got to change. You're not allowed to be red, white, and blue.
Okay.
The Clippers, you got to change. Not allowed to be red, white, and blue.
Sure.
The Pelicans are kind of there. They're like navy red and gold. At least that is, I believe, the Louisiana state flag. So you get a pass there because at least it's relevant.
Okay.
The New Orleans flag, sorry. The Louisiana one is just blue and white, but the New Orleans one is navy, white, red with gold. So like you get a pass there. But basically what I'm saying is the Detroit Pistons and the Clippers have to change their color scheme. The Clippers, I'll give it to you. If you change your royal slash navy blue to light blue, I'll give you a pass there. Pistons, bring back the teal. Bring back the 90s Grant Hill jerseys.
Yes, like with an actual piston on it.
Yes. So give me that. Yeah, that's the annoying thing about the piston situation right now is like there is no car iconography. There is no horse iconography, which is fun because like horsepower. It's just red, white, and blue. And then everything else is just like D and P. And it's been that way since the mid 2000s. Like, give me something else. Yes, you have that cool logo where it's like a P with a D inside of it to make the whole of the P. That's cute. But like, give me something, Detroit. Come on. So maybe they'll embrace this new like bad boy thing that they're doing. But yeah, red, white, and blue when you're not like a red, white, and blue themed thing is just so boring. Like the NBA logo is already red, white, and blue. Right. Come on, give me something else.
Just because you're a bad boy doesn't mean that you get to have bad jerseys.
Exactly. Now, number one worst is part because of the color scheme and part because of the potential. It's the San Antonio Spurs. You give me the Fiesta. Give it to me. And there, I will have to say, I want to give a not posthumous, but after the fact, we should readjust our rankings of this year's city jerseys. Because have you seen the Spurs ones? On the little image that we saw, they looked white, but they're like this very slightly blue situation. Like they're like very faintly light blue.
Well, you know what? I think the inherent challenge when we rank the jerseys or even the courts is that like they look different when you see teams playing in them or on them. Like you can never really get a sense just from like an image of a floating jersey or a court right. from above. And then when you see them on TV or players in them, I think that's like a better gauge.
Right. Maybe this will inform us in the future of like next time we do a city jersey thing, we should wait until the jerseys have actually been worn because there's certain things, but like theirs are fresh and it's like so faintly blue, but it looks really crisp and clean. And then their city edition court to go with these jerseys looks very cool as well. So they feel like they are on the cusp of embracing color, but currently still like their official color scheme is just black and gray. And especially because they used to have the Fiesta of the gold and the teal and the pink, like, oh God. So it just bugs me. They've had it for quite some time now. It's just not fun. And like, I didn't rope the Nets into this with their things being black and white because like with the Nets, like it kind of works. Like it's very intentional that they went with no color. It's black and white, so it's a little crisper than black and gray. You're named after a piece of material and equipment for the sport. So like, sure, Nets are white. You can be white.
Yeah.
And I think they make it work with like all of the other things they do, like when they do subway tile theme designs and stuff. So like it weirdly works for the Nets a little bit more. With the Spurs, it's just like, all right, like there's no reason for them to be black and gray. They just are black and gray.
So yeah.
It's boring. Give me some color. All right. Let's get into the good. For number three, I'm giving it to every team that uses purple because I think that's a bold color choice for them to use. And for all of these teams, it works well. And there's a surprising amount of purple in the NBA. The Los Angeles Lakers, fantastic. Purple and gold, iconic. They will never change it. They should never change it. Then the Sacramento Kings. The purple looks good as well. And it makes sense because purple historically is a color of royalty. So for the Kings to have purple, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
The Jazz, currently it's not official, but I think that they will soon be correcting their mistakes and re-embracing the purple, which did look good in the past. The Hornets with their purple and teal looks fantastic. So all of the teams that use purple. I think it looks good. I think it's fun. It's a surprise to me that there's so many teams using it, and I appreciate them for using it and embracing it. I think purple looks good for all of the teams that have done it in their different iterations, whether that's the purple and gray of the Kings, the purple and teal of the Hornets, etc.
So you'd be fine with red, white, and purple?
Sure. I think that would look bad probably from like a color perspective, but
yeah,
I would prefer it to red, white, and blue if you're not the Sixers or the Wizards.
Okay.
Number two, I'm going to give it to any team that picks their colors based off of the city flag or the state flag, because it's something that I think works. You've seen it in other sports, like all of Pittsburgh's teams are black and yellow. You might know this because of the song Black and Yellow, but the Pittsburgh flag is black and yellow. So to have a black and yellow sports team to go along with your city's flag, I think makes a lot of sense. So the Pelicans do this, which I think it's valid. The New York Knickerbockers, my beloved New York Knickerbockers, do it. The New York state flag is blue, white, and orange. So that's where their color scheme is blue, white, and orange. So I think if you are embracing the city or the state that you're from, and you utilize that town's official historical colors into your color scheme, I think it's cool. I think more places should embrace it. Oh, purple. I forgot to say the Suns. The Suns also use purple, and it looks awesome.
The Suns
purple and orange looks very, very cool. So sorry about that. But continuing onward, I just think if you're using the colors of your city or your state, It's a good call. There might be some others that I'm missing, but I didn't want to just give it to the Knicks because I would also like to give nod to the Pelicans. And the Pelicans also, it's cool. The Pelican is the state bird. So you're really showing like we care about the city. We have used the city to inform our decision making because everything is pretend when you're picking a team name and team colors. So why not pay homage to the actual place where your team plays?
Yeah.
And number one, I have given it to the Denver Nuggets of old, and this is for two things. First, going older, when they had the crisp royal blue and bright yellow and rainbow situation going on, the Dikembe, Alex English years, gosh, just eternally good jerseys that are fantastic. Like, rainbow was in the logo, it was in the jersey, like, it was embraced, it was cool, it was awesome. Everything looked great. And then they had a bad spell where they were, like, navy and gold, and it didn't look good. I think they had the red in there as well. This is like the LaPhonso Ellis 90s era. They were very bad at basketball, and their jerseys were very ugly as well. And then they changed up the color scheme after Carmelo Anthony came to town, and they had those so clean, so crisp, so gorgeous light blue and yellow jerseys where they had the... Oh.
Yeah, and that was also in the day where it was like kind of a sheen to it. It was like this sort of shiny sort of, it's very of its time, but that moment I loved it.
It was so good. It was like of the time. I think in the mid-2000s when they did this, that was like a very popular kind of thing. You had like those light blues. You had Cameron wearing a bunch of pink. So you have a lot of things in the zeitgeist. Cameron's a rapper, if anyone's unaware.
Yes.
Like things in the zeitgeist of like embracing more of those like softer, traditionally maybe seen as more feminine tones. And gosh, those jerseys look so cool. Even when they had those like funky ones where they brought in the navy blue, those always make me think of J.R. Smith on the Nuggets specifically.
Right.
It just looked really good. And it was so different. No other team had light blue. No other team really does have light blue. Like the Memphis Grizzlies use it as an accent color. The Mavs kind of, but their blue is more royal. Like no one's really using that baby blue.
Yeah, I feel like it's so iconic for UNC, like in college, and no one in the NBA really utilizes it as well. Like I think you mentioned the Clippers do have a version of it. The Bulls weirdly had like, actually that was cool because it's their city flag. So
city
like
flag.
That was kind of the vibe for one of the city edition uniforms.
But. Yeah. Right. So I think it should be used more. Yeah. The Clippers, when they had those baby blue ones as alternates in the Blake Griffin CP3 Lob City era, like they always look so good. I just think baby blue, there's something about it. It just like works really well as a jersey, looks good on an NBA court. So those baby blue and gold ones are great. And now the Nuggets, like they went back to the navy and the gold and the red, which I think has to do with the Colorado state flag. So I'm in this weird torn thing of like, it does make sense, but it is just a problem of like, gosh, their other stuff was so good. So like,
yeah.
I'm not actively as upset with the current Nuggets as I am with the Spurs, because there's no reason. Like, there's at least a reason why the Nuggets are doing what they're doing because of the state flag. But like, mm-hmm. gosh, they had two really solid color schemes in their history, and I would love it if they brought it back. And it feels like they've embraced the rainbow for some of these City Edition jerseys, but like, they really haven't gone back to the baby blue and golds, and I think everyone's just waiting, and I think people will be so excited about it. Maybe they haven't done it because it's like too reminiscent of Carmelo Anthony, and that relationship really did not end on good terms, but man, you just got to do it. You really just got to do it. So
yeah,
that is my selections of color schemes. I could talk about this for hours on end. I have so many thoughts about different color schemes that teams are using or did in the past and things that they could do differently, but
yeah,
I'm so thankful to Tomi for sending that email so that I can have the excuse to talk about it on Horse.
There you go.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Horse. Horse is hosted by Adam Amawala and Mike Schuber. Our editor is Kensei Suramaki. The music is by Bettina Kambamanis. The art is by Allison Wakeman. The website's by Kelly Schubert. And the social media is by both of the Horse Boys.
Thank you to our producer-level patrons, Polly Burge, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang, Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry, Courtside, Watching the Valkyries.
Bang!
Hi, Trish, Chase Underulo, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby is a Vampire, Chelsea's Cousin, Ginger, Spurs Boy, Balls to the Walls, and Mas Furley. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Horse Hoops and on Twitter at Horse_Hoops because...
The Horse Hoops account was not protected in the expansion draft, and it was scooped away. And
usurped, some might say. You can go to our website, horsehoops.com, for links to the many things we talked about today, including some more info about the legendary Dr. Jack Ramsey and maybe a condensed version of the expansion draft.
Yes, and if you want to support the Horse Boys, you can do it in a couple of ways. You can go to patreon.com/horsehoops, sign up for those new tiers, help us out. You can also go to horsehoops.com/merch and get physical merch like Sup Nerds It's Basketball shirts, and then digital things like Sup Nerds It's Basketball wallpapers. But we're going to conclude this episode by saying something on the count of three, as we always do. What do we want to do? Do we want to throw Happy Holidays in the mix? Is this the
Happy Holidays?
Because this is coming out on the 16th.
Yeah, 16th or 17th, I guess. Now that we're Tuesday boys.
Oh, right, because we're Tuesday boys. Yeah, so I think we'll.
Sure, I think that's nice. Else. No, we can do a Happy Holidays, and then we'll have a Happy New Year for the next one.
You got NBA Christmas Day games, which are going to be very fun. Knicks there as always.
Fun, but also, as I think you can relate to as a colorblind person, red jerseys versus green jerseys. I might as well not watch the game. It's a brutal watch for a colorblind person.
Well, I don't know that they ever have actually fully embraced the red versus green.
I think they have. They have at least. Oh. I remember a game where they did that, and it was like unwatchable.
Well, I have not.
It is truly one of the best days of basketball of the year. So, a happy holidays on three. Happy holidays. Hope it's nice.
I'm so mad that there's football games now. There's football games on Christmas now. It should be illegal. This is the NBA.
You know what? We should call a penalty for encroachment.
I'm just worried that my football-loving in-laws are going to want to put the game on. I'm going to be like, absolutely not. I'm going upstairs.
I get it. You know, sad football sound. And just because we're at the end of the episode, baseball.
Oh, we never did it.
But we did.
Now we did. We did.